no dejaremos que cierren la linda puerta que siempre ha estado abierta a la vida.
This is Latin Radical with Warwick Fry. And today we're talking to Susanna Weiss and John Riddell, a Canadian couple who went to Venezuela on an Australian organised brigade. And I started off by asking them, what did they expect?
I really didn't know what to expect, Warwick. Thank you for giving us this opportunity to talk on radio. But what we found was very astonishing, and it was an extremely well-organized tour. Our tour organizer was really extremely good, and he took us to places where we would not have been able to go on our own. That was Frederick Fuentes, who organized the whole tour. And he also translated for us, and that was really very important for us, although we did have someone who spoke Spanish, but it was limited Spanish. We saw cooperatives there. We saw people in action. We saw people who were organizing their lives through their community council and through their cooperatives that they were building, and were discussions. It was really very, very exciting to be in Venezuela at the time of the referendum, when we saw people trying to organize to win the referendum. We were in two demonstrations that Fred brought us to. One was a student demonstration of 60,000 people, all students. And then we went to the end of the referendum demonstration, which was 750,000 people. And we were there with our sign, and it said in Spanish, Canadians for the Venezuelan Revolution, and we were extremely well received.
And John, can you talk a little bit about the community councils? How do they work, and what sort of projects did they take on?
I'll say something else first. What we saw in Venezuela is completely unlike anything we have ever seen before, except when we visited Cuba in the early 1960s. You see a mass demonstration in Venezuela, and in some ways it's a little like a mass demonstration against the war in Sydney or in Toronto, except 10 times bigger. But there's a difference. Demonstration in Sydney or Toronto is full of people who are totally, totally frustrated and alienated. Because even though the mass majority of the population wants an end to the war, there is no way the government will listen. So people have no experience of ever having had a share of governmental authority. Well, in Venezuela, you have a mass demonstration of people who have experienced struggles and experienced processes through which they've been able to change their country and made it fundamentally different. And that gives the whole thing a different air, an air of confidence, of joy, of creativity that we don't find in backward countries like Canada. And it's a wonderful thing to experience, and I hope you all will be able to share it.
One thing that was really interesting about meeting the people in the demonstrations and in their own communities, and when we asked them about the reforms, it was quite amazing. They could quote each of the reforms they thought was most important. And they, of course, quoted it from memory. I was extremely impressed. And these people are really interested in the future of their country, in their own future. And it was much, very, very evident. It's so different than how it is in Canada, where, people are disillusioned and feel that they really can't demonstrate even for what they feel very strongly for.
I'll give an example. Is a little community that we went to outside of Caracas. We went there. Fred bundled us into a bus, and we took the bus for a few hours. Then we loaded into the back of a pickup truck, and it rattled over some very bad roads, and then finally splashed down into a gully and across a river and up the other side of the country, a gully, and there we were. at a hamlet called Altos de Uslar. This is a mountain community of farmers with about 230 people, half of whom are kids. And they have formed a communal council because that's the way things are done in Venezuela. They decide in an assembly what their top priorities are for the year. And they make a list from 1 to 10 of the things they would like to do in the community. And then they send this list on to the other bodies of what they call people's power in Venezuela. And it has to be coordinated with the available money and with the needs in the other part of the community. But the end of it is that it's decided which projects will be done this year. They are allocated the money and then they spend it. And of course, they use all of their skills, their connections, and their guile to keep the costs down. Because what we have here is the secret of what Karl Marx once called cheap government. They have every reason to want to spend as little as possible and invest in volunteer labor when possible in order to stretch the money, and perhaps if the task was to build two houses, perhaps they can build three or four. They meet in assemblies about every 2 weeks or sometimes every week, depending on what there is to discuss, and between 40 to 100 people crowd into the little community center, which was their first project. To discuss the business of the day. Their second project that they're working on when we got there is to put up a school for a preschool. We don't do things like that in Canada. We make the schools as far as possible away from the communities and as big as possible, and everybody has to take a bus to get there, which takes a long time. In Venezuela, they like to do things on a community level. There are community schools, most of them one room. There are community health centers, most of them one room. And in this way, people can have easy, by foot access without having to travel around by car. So it's a whole different pattern of government and social services and also of living.
Yes. And as a matter of fact, the schools, as I understand, are actually built quite near the communities, so that women who have a lot of children, don't have to worry about public transportation, and they're right in the schools are right in their communities. And we saw one project, for instance, which is indicative of other projects in Venezuela, of children who, thousands of children who are abandoned and who are usually are involved in criminal activities. And some of these kids are called, they are rag pickers. They go into mountains of rags and pick, I don't know what they pick, but in any case, in Carabobo, they have rounded up these children and they have involved them in music and bands and drumming and all kinds of instruments that they're learning, and they also have a they've also been involved in karate. Some other children were involved in karate, and these kids actually competed internationally, and it was really a joy to see these young children who felt now that they had a future, that they were involved in something that was constructive and brought joy to their own lives.
You know, these are not pilot projects that we saw. For example, the fact that you have 30 or 40 slum kids who used to work full-time picking up garbage in the toxic garbage dump, but now they're playing in an orchestra that tours around Venezuela. It's not just them. There are 300,000 children involved in Venezuela's orchestra program. And these are popular orchestras where people pay nothing, get top-notch instruction, and more in Venezuela and around the world, children of the slums are excelling in classical music and being picked up in the world's great orchestras. It's amazing and absolutely unique program. The literacy program educated 1,500 illiterates. There are no more illiterates in Venezuela. The health program involved supplying something like 20,000, 30,000 doctors. working in the local neighborhoods, providing free and accessible medical care and medicines to the poorest people in the society who had never had medical care before. This entire problem of health care was solved within 2 or 3 years, a problem that we in Canada can't solve. We're certainly not too poor. I guess we're just too stupid. We can't figure out the way to do it. Mm-hmm. But for the Venezuelans, it became very quickly and very easy. So these are major changes in the fabric of the lives of poor people in that country.
Mm-hmm. And the reason I think it is because the Chavez government has, they know that people can do it if they're given the way to do it. That is, they can do it. But they have to be given a chance to organize their own lives. They also have to have money from the government, which we know is being given to them. And on voting day, we went to 23 Enero, and it's 23 January, it's called, a hamlet in the hills. And there we saw some kitchens that were being organized, that were organized by the community. And there are 3,000 kitchens all across Venezuela that is organized for people who are indigenous and people who can't afford their own meals or housing. So in this particular community, we saw this kitchen and we were treated to a meal there of rice, beans, and plantanas. And that's how it is. They feed every day. They feed in that community 150 people who are poor, who are women with who have children. And this is actually organized in each community. It's quite amazing.
When we say the poor, mm-hmm. of course, we're talking here about the 75% of the population, not just a small minority. One thing, the right-wing opposition in Venezuela often says that Hugo Chavez and his government want to destroy private property. Chavez likes to respond that actually he's creating private property. For example, there is a massive housing program in Venezuela that is making it possible for poor people to own houses. Also, there's a very great deal of government money being put into enabling poor people to set up small businesses. For example, the government has financed 3,000 beauty parlors in the last couple of years. But for hardworking women in the poorer areas, this is a wonderful chance to have their own little business, buy something that's much needed and much appreciated by their friends and neighbors. So there's a lot of that in Venezuela, and in a very small time basis, little projects that change a lot.
Mm. And one of the things is that although the referendum was defeated, it was proven that actually Venezuela is not a dictatorship, that Chavez appreciates democracy. He appreciates people's democracy. That's the most important thing. That's what he wants to deepen. And the most important thing he said was that, you know, they have to really apply themselves and create this new socialist party so that they can deepen the revolution. It's very important that the people beneath, that is the people who run their own communities, have the opportunity to do so, and more importantly, that they do so on where their needs are brought to the attention of the government.
Could you tell us a little bit about the relationship between the grassroots community organizations and the government itself? It seems to be that, on one hand, Chavez is accused of trying to centralize power towards himself by giving more power to the community organizations, and yet the community organizations seem to be developing more autonomy and bypassing bureaucracy.
The community councils is to decentralize governmental power down to the street level, so that governmental power will be exerted not by full-time officials or bureaucrats, but by people who participate directly. The community councils operate on the basis of an assembly. That is, you don't elect an executive or board to handle your affairs, to make decisions yourself. This, not to say that the government isn't necessary. For example, when I was describing how a community council makes a decision on some development project, of course, this is a partnership between the community council on the one hand and the technical staff and engineers and budgetary people of the government on the other. And the it works best when it's done well at both sides, at both ends. That doesn't always happen. The community councils don't always function perfectly, and the government is, bureaucracy is not always responsive. We have to remember that the government ministries are basically held over from the old regime, and sometimes they have a rather formal and negative approach towards citizen initiatives. Well, that's just something they need to work out in the process of struggle, and I think their main priority right now is to try to make the community council stronger.
Well, thanks, John and Susan, for sharing your Venezuelan experience with our listeners.
Well, if you would like to read more about our tour, go to your internet and type in Venezuela, We Are With You Coalition, and the coalition website will come up, and you can read about more about what we did in Venezuela, and of course about our committee here in Toronto. We have great respect for the Venezuela, for the Australia-Venezuela Solidarity Network that organized our tour. They, we think, are the leading solidarity organization for Venezuela internationally. They're doing a very wonderful job. I hope your listeners will perhaps get in touch.
I understand their next tour is in May, so they should log on and find out about it. I highly recommend it, and I think Fred Fuentes is superb at organizing and really did a good job for us.
That's VenezuelaSolidarity.org.
And thank you very much. Thank you very much for interviewing us.
And thank you for talking to Latin Radical and Community Radio TuneIn FM. All the best.
Okay, we look forward to talking to you another time.